This is apartment 303.
Didn't they say 304? No, 303. I wrote it down twice.
Apartment 303, which I've definitely heard of.
Greetings, human beings, and welcome back to Apartment 303, a podcast for community fans. My name is Dave, and alongside my co-host Dan, we are here every month to discuss all things community, each and every layer of the show, and why we love it so much. On today's episode, Dan and I are going to be taking a deep dive into both of the Valentine's Day episodes of Community. Season 1, Episode 16, Communication Studies, and Season 2, Episode 14, Early 21st Century Romanticism. But before we get to tearing everything about those episodes apart, Dan, how have you been, my friend? What have you been up to?
It's one of those things where it's like in your own life, when you're going through things on a day to day, they seem pretty slow. And then I was sitting here talking and we catch up, you know, a couple times a month. And then I'm like, oh, wait, I actually am doing a lot of stuff right now. So I did get a chance to guest on my good buddy, Matt Nost. He has a podcast with a friend of ours across the pond in London named Andy Merriweather. And they have their own version of a game show on YouTube. And it's called Settle the Score. And it's basically their version of Name That Tune. So I got lucky enough, they asked me to be on that, and so that came out week and a half ago, probably about 2 weeks by the time this comes out. And then the other bigger news, more immediately dealing with community, is I was named a new admin for the Communities account, which is normally run by Matt, who is just one of the nicest people you could ever meet. And he reached out earlier last week, and he was like, hey, how would you feel about this? And so we had a couple conversations, and I've been getting my feet wet, doing a little bit of that. So yeah, interacting with just a lot of different parts of the community fandom, which is pretty great and a really good time to be doing it because there's a lot of stuff that's going to be happening in the next few months, as you know, we'll talk about and everyone will talk about. So
I think I'm pretty comfortable saying that everyone who's heard of this podcast has probably interacted with the community's Twitter account at some point.
Yes.
Saying as that's kind of been the leading force of the fandom, especially on the Twitter front,
for some time. And only to briefly cut you off, he's actually the reason I'm even here. Matt reached out to me and he said, I know Dave was looking for a new co-host. And like, he reached out like, hey, I'm going to put you guys in touch. Let's see what happened. And then what did we talk for, like an hour, hour and a half the first time where we were like, it was like a rough chemistry read and it just went really well.
Yeah, it was like Pierce and Troy.
Yeah, exactly.
Bonding right away.
Am I black boobs?
Underrated, very underrated. And speaking of underrated, what we're going to talk about today, I would consider these are two of the more underrated episodes. I think we kind of scratched the surface in our previous episode where we were focusing on comparing the Christmas holiday episodes, but you know, our final segment on that last episode, we really did kind of expand it to have a little discussion about how those Christmas episodes stacked up against the other holiday episodes. Halloween, obviously being some of the most well-known episodes of the series as well. The more underrated Thanksgiving and April Fool's episode. And then the two we're going to talk about today. So I guess the starting point for today's conversation is to talk about how you want to talk about this. It's hard to do rankings when you only have two episodes, especially when I feel like they're so close. But there's a lot of different ways I had considered we might approach this. Was there one that was at the top of your list?
I think we could probably, at least for the time being, we can go episode by episode. That's fine, so, especially since there's only two. And to tip my hand a little bit, I don't think I said it in the last episode, but these were, because I had the Christmas ones really high and then Epidemiology at one for me. But these were, what was my ranking? These were 5 and 6. These were right below the Christmas episodes for me. Like, I was shocked going back and rewatching just how good the Valentine's episodes were.
I think I had them 3 and 5, somewhere in there. This very solidly second
tier. They're good, yeah.
And I think the reason, the biggest overall reason for me that I think that's kind of where they slot in the hierarchy is because, well, I do kind of consider them all-time episodes, and we're going to get to some of the funnier parts, some of the more serious parts. I think that they both very heavily lean toward advancing the actual overarching story of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And are not the, you know, more wacky or bottle episodes or, you know, some of the more ridiculous nonstop laughter. Well, certainly they're both funny. I think they're more heavily, you know, that kind of development side of episodes.
Especially once you get into season two, where it's the episode before the first documentary one and Pierce is in the hospital. Like, there's a huge through line from that one directly.
Yeah, it basically leads right into the opening of the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's kick things off. Let's start with communication studies, season 1, 16. Right off the bat, there's a couple things. There's a lot of things that you could pull from this episode that are some of the most well-known moments of the show. Right off the bat, the first things I wrote down were sarcastic Abed and drunk Abed. And while I am a fan of both, I would have to say that sarcastic Abed for me is second to none, and we get him multiple times in this episode.
It's pretty great that, and I was thinking about this today during the rewatch, that the show was so, it was set up as a sitcom, but we're about halfway through, a little more than halfway through the first season run, and you can see Dan Harmon already starting to tear down your normal sitcom tropes with Abed being, like, he was already a meta character, and then especially in this episode where he's, like, even going further and you're showing the, I think this comes after the Abed is a shaman, like, that he keeps predicting things that are going to happen. So we already know about how meta he's being using the study group as characters. But then when you're getting that scene where he's filming Chang's, he's filming a scene that was in the same episode as the scene that he's currently direct. Like, the layers that they put into, like, a random one-off episode about Valentine's is just so funny and flabbergasting to me.
And when Abed's doing that directing scene that we see, that's kind of the C plot. It's almost in the background. It's there, but it's not the focus of how the episode is developing. You know, the more immediate threat is Abed is trying to counsel Jeff through this situation that is threatening, at this part in the series, halfway through season one, the study group doesn't quite have the rock-solid foundation we see later in the show where it's like even when they all decide they hate each other, they're like, well, we're not going to break up, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't have that kind of foundation yet. And Abed is like, no, this could really, really upset the balance. And that's kind of the main throughway that he ends up being a shaman in this episode. So, yeah, you've got that other meta level. And I love they're all very good, but especially the actor what is it, the young Asian kid from Lost, or the young Asian guy from Lost?
Yeah, he's going to turn into an Asian guy from Lost, yeah.
The one who just quit smoking. Like, everything, yeah, that happens in the overarching
season. He's like 14, yeah.
Season where Abed is, you know, his directing is developing through basically making episodes of the study group. And as we see at various points around that, they tend to be various levels of prophecy. But in this episode, it's just a really, really funny background plot.
There was still, and this shows you how early this episode is, there's still a fair amount of Jock Troy in this episode, which we don't get for that much longer, which I don't mind, because the funny Troy is so much better than Jock Troy. And that was the, you know, the B storyline of Pierce and Troy not getting Valentine's. And then before we get too far, I don't want to forget about it. Since we're still talking about Abed, when I was making notes, when we were talking about the holiday episodes and before we got into that, I'm just like doing flow of consciousness, things that I hadn't caught before, things that I wanted to say about. And the fact that they strip Abed all the way down once he's hungover and he can't process quick enough, when Jeff goes like very loudly, that was the reverse singer from mine before. And then a couple of lines later, just nods and goes, movie reference. I wrote in all caps in my notes, this show has turned me into fucking Abed because I can relate anything back to Community.
Yeah, I love it when he can't remember the girl's name from the show, Kids in Detention.
Molly Ringworm.
It's definitely a high point for me. Adam was previously, when we discussed this show, really spoke out against people acting drunk when they're not, but I really defended it. Like, I think they don't do it too much here, and it serves its vehicle in the show, and it does give us those highlights where Abed is kind of on the fritz, and we get to see him hungover and, you know, doing those generic things of his personality, but not quite being the robot Abed that we're used to seeing.
I will say, as far as, like, because I've heard that before, too, that's not just a criticism thing. Like, I've heard a lot of people, like, acting drunk is a very specific thing to do, and especially, like, I'll get a little, this will be my tiny soapbox because I am an actor. Tiny soapbox here is it also depends on what you're trying to achieve in the scene. So a lot of times when people are like, that's not how someone would act drunk, you have to think about, well, what are they servicing as far as the plot and what you're trying to do goes. I think what they do really well here is they keep a really, because it is a sitcom. So first and foremost, it's supposed to be funny. So what they do that I think they do a really good job here is a lot of the like drunk speaking is in voiceover. It's in like voicemails, which I think you get away with a lot more. It doesn't have to be as like specific and purposeful. Like when you hear Britta's, like, yeah, it's over the top, but that's kind of the point. And then when you hear Jeff's at the very end, that's kind of the point too. And then you can even double down and say, yeah, this is even being more meta about it because you have a character directing another character in the show on the proper way to sound drunk and make it sound believable. So there's like, even I was even watching that earlier and I'm like, as Abed's directing him, I'm like, some of this stuff, like I, from many different points in my life and in points in my career, like what Abed is saying is he's trying to appeal to Jeff as an actor and Jeff's not an actor. So he's like, oh, they're going to love you in California. Like so many parts of this show are so, they're such small, authentic moments. I think that's one of the reasons why it always identifies with me as well. Cause it's like, there's always a way this is going to resonate with someone.
I was going to try to build to the point where asking you who your episode MVP would be, but I guess at this point we need to frame it as, is there another character in this episode that you think shines more than Abed?
More than Abed? This is a good example, too, of how I feel like you could have an argument that season one Chang is actually more unhinged than season three Chang, and season three is a warlord. So you do get, I don't know if I'd call him my MVP, but like, One of my favorite gifts to use from the show is the "Have you met me" line where he says that and he's pointing at his own head. I do love that line a whole lot. I'm trying to think if there are any other.
It's like, right up there with "I'll Allow It" from season yeah, one's Christmas episode.
Exactly. It's very like same character, but
yeah, totally Chang is crazy energies. This episode, yeah. But it's not in that, oh god, Chang's being crazy again way. Like it's still, I don't know, wacky and whimsical, I feel like, to the largest extent, and especially the way that Troy and Pierce play off of it.
The elegant ladies' pantsuits. Yeah, I think it would be, if I'm doing MVPs, obviously it's Abed 1. I mean, Jeff does a pretty good job. Jeff, his whole storyline is all sitcom. I think maybe that's the best way to boil it all the way down, is Jeff is 100% a sitcom lead in a sitcom in this particular episode, but then when you're running the entire plot line by Abed, he's just like, well, okay, if you're a sitcom character in a sitcom episode, this is what you have to do to get out of it, and this is what we're going to have to do as characters. And it's like, that is oddly simplistic, but the fact that you're calling it out, like, it somehow, it should make it awkward, but it doesn't, and it still works. So there's a lot to it. Like, also, a really random thing. This is the first Beetlejuice mention in this episode.
What is your name? Britta? Buttle?
Butter? Beetlejuice?
Yeah, we get that, and then right off the beginning with that as well, you'd mentioned how we got the drunk voicemails, we get the voicemail from the dean, so there's a lot of dialogue in this episode that is done through voicemails, and there is a lot of kind of the more stereotypical sitcoms stuff that I tend to kind of ding episodes of Community for the most part, but I would say out of all the kind of love triangle episodes, this is one of my very favorites. I think that outside of Abed, you could kind of make a case for Jeff or Britta. They're both, I think, kind of at their best at various points in this episode. I would say probably more Britta.
This episode does a good job of showing them as foils, like as very much two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, I think so. And there's definitely, there's a lot of give and take too throughout the episode where kind of one has the upper hand and then it keeps kind of changing back and forth. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, unlike kind of the rest of their relationship, especially up to that point in the show, it actually is resolved in a good way, at least in a way that is, satisfying, I suppose, and gives temporary closure in the episode.
Well, I was going to say, we do also need to at least acknowledge the massive Breakfast Club homage, the dance homage in the middle of the episode, because it's there's one thing Community does all the time. It's homages. You have the same song, even. You have the same dances, even. I think at one point I danced like Abed does in this episode, which was from the Breakfast Club on a job I did 6 years ago, something like that. Was it that long ago? It might have been that long ago. It's a long time ago. And I was just doing those kind of arm flailing things. And that was the one I did where it's like, oh, I guess this is dancing. Also because I didn't know I was going to be dancing until about 10 minutes before it happened. So
I actually just recently learned what that was from. I've been kind of going through taking notes about all the songs in the shows we get ready for this year's music bracket that's coming up next month. And as I was rewatching this episode, I was like, well, what is this song? This gets a pretty long, good amount of screen time in the show. A lot of the songs we're going to be talking about, you know, we only hear them for a handful of seconds. And whereas this one, we get a pretty long snippet of the song. So I looked it up, and then I was like, of course, this would be from The Breakfast Club. And I had enjoyed this before that, but that takes it to a whole nother level because it's, you know, it's right after that montage where they're specifically talking about, you know, how that part of him is broken and how he can't kind of make that connection to The Breakfast Club, not just as something that's always in his brain, but it was also kind of where they left things off.
Even though it was probably 100% Abed's idea. So,
and there was one other thing for the montage I had not caught before, but it's in that same dance sequence. There's a poster in Abed's room for Kick Splasher, which is some sort of apparently water-based kick puncher movie.
Sure.
But they have a whole like fake movie poster for it. I'm not sure how I hadn't caught that before either. It's amazing how after all this time and these many rewatches, there's still always something new to check out. I probably would rank this one ahead of this next one we're going to talk about. But let's get into that before making any final judgments. Because this next Valentine's Day episode, I would argue, gets off to one of the best openings, one of the best starts of any episode in the entire series of the show. Not only do we get books in and of itself, Troy and Abed shouting books to the librarian, setting up that whole storyline for the episode. That in and of itself would have been a great opening. One of the all-timers. But after that, we get the scene in the study room where the study group is fighting with Jeff, and they're having two fights simultaneously, one about Pierce using pills and the other about the bare naked ladies. And everyone knows here what a huge fan I am of that. But the fact that this episode gets not one, but two, and I like the episode from the opening from Communication Studies. You know, you got the Cupid being, the voicemail, the Beetlejuice thing that you brought up. But it does not compare in any way to the first 4 or 5 minutes of this episode.
That's very fair. And especially because not only are you getting the yelling of books, but then you're getting a throwback joke to Pretend Like You're Asleep, which I think is, it's got to be one of
the end tags when they're making fun of people that can hear them.
It's one of his favorite improvs, but I love it so much because it's just like, how do you get out of this? Just pretend like you're asleep. But going full bore into the bare naked ladies joke, because it's... You could also argue that, like, outside of Shirley, everyone else who reacts to that, because Pierce is already gone, they're all younger than he is, and they're all like, whoa, 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 how dare you besmirch bare naked ladies? And they're all, the fact that they're all so committed and so indignant is probably one of my favorite parts about that.
And the seamless back and forth, how they're simultaneously, every dig is at both conversations at the same time.
Pull a knife out of one of the most celebrated alt rock bands of the late 90s.
They're escalating at a similar level too with each comment. Both fights are escalating until it boils over with that, and Jeff officially declares it a fight, which not only is a great intro, but for me sets the stage for one of the most unique storylines in Community, where Jeff spends the rest of the episode away from the rest of the study group.
Very true.
He spends the rest of the episode with the side characters. You know, we get a lot of Duncan, some Chang development, the first episode of Magnitude, I believe.
Pop. It is, yes.
We get some Leonard in here, some other joke, you know, one-off side, one-liner side characters.
Starburns being heartburns for this episode. I will say, too, this is one of the rare episodes. There's an A, B, C, and D storyline in this episode. There are so many stories going on that they cram into 22 minutes.
Okay, so we've got... would you say the A storyline is Troy and Abed trying to date the librarian?
If you're talking pure, like, pound-for-pound time, I would have to, like, do a stopwatch, but it's probably real close. Or maybe two simultaneous A storylines, because you have, Troy, Abed, and Mariah... And then you have...
Britta and her lesbian, or...
I think that would be the
allegedly lesbian friend.
Exactly. So I would say Troy, Abed, Mariah would be A, and then tied for A, B would be Winger, Duncan, and Chang at the soccer/party. And then you have the C, which I think would be Britta, and then her not lesbian friend. And then
you
D's
have
the
Pierce and Andy Pierce Dick, the right?
Yeah.
Okay, what is Shirley doing in this episode?
She is... I'm trying to think if she's in it.
I know she's in the beginning, for sure, but I don't remember she's at the dance. I know in Communication Studies, she's right there with Annie the whole time, and they're kind of, trying to support Troy and Pierce, who are not really helping their efforts to be supported.
Oh, no, you're going back to thinking of the first Valentine's Day episode.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was talking about, I was saying, as opposed to.
Oh, she, yeah, Shirley is not much. She's not in the season two in early 21st century. Yeah, she's in the first one. She's one of the people who sends the letter to Chang, trying to, like, call him out and make him feel bad after he humiliated Troy and Pierce.
So I think it's safe to say, you're right, there's at least four real storylines that they're weaving in early 21st century romanticism. And
there's a lot there, and it does feel pretty well balanced. So, like, and you were saying ranking them, that's why they're, I don't remember which I had above which other, but that's one of the reasons I like this one so much, because they cover a lot of ground. You do get even like a little sitcom-y at the end of it, but even when Jeff allows Chang to crash with him, he starts to soften up and realize he doesn't want to turn into Pierce, which is another seed that they plant at the very beginning of the episode, where Jeff's like, no, screw this. Like, I don't want to open my heart. Exactly. I don't want to open my heart. And then you get Valentine's Crappentines, and he goes, open my heart's on my list. Like, because he sees Pierce and he's like, I don't want to become that.
On second thought.
Exactly. And so that's where you get probably one of the most bittersweet tags in the entire series.
Yeah.
Where he sends the text to everybody and Pierce is passed out on the bench.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the point where he opens up his voicemails to Bragg and doesn't have any, but yeah, the finisher there when he follows up and gives his kind of winger speech via text there at the end.
Yeah, I'm sure he was very happy not to have to film how he has to film so many per season. So I'm sure he was happy just to be able to do a voiceover for one of them for once.
But we get some Streets Ahead in this episode, and then you know, one of my other all-timers, Gravedigger's Biscuits, is from this episode. It's actually not that far away. We're 20 past right now. But when we first started recording the podcast, we would always record at 6:30 at Gravedigger's Biscuits, just in the spirit of John Oliver and this episode. But we actually kept that up. Actually, most of the episodes of the first few seasons of the show were recorded at Gravedigger's Biscuits. So that is definitely something from this episode that has stood the test of time and in our fandom here, at least.
I mean, in England, everything means vagina, so.
Is that an English fanny? So I asked you, and it was pretty obvious, I would say, for communication studies, but for this episode, I would hazard a guess that it's going to be less obvious of an answer, but who would you say is your MVP out of the characters for this episode, season 2, episode 14, early 21st century romanticism?
Out of all of those, because there's so many balls in the air. Like, I'm half tempted.
There's got to be a joke there.
Yeah, right? Ha! That's a season 4 one, isn't it?
Yes, that was just balls me riffing on what you said, because so many balls in the air.
Yeah, when Pierce has them all in front of him. I'm trying to think, because I want to split it evenly between Troy and Abed, because they're so cute and so charming. And then if you listen to the commentary, when they have the briefcase and they first approach Mariah, and she goes, what's in the briefcase? And they go, tacos. You want one? And she goes, no. And he goes, yes. We both wanted them.
Yeah, we really wanted them.
When they turn around at first to come up with a new plan, you can hear them muttering a little bit. And all you can hear is, tacos. Like, that's all you can hear. So it's just such a great joke with that. I'm almost, you know what? Just because it drives, I think for this episode, I'm going to go way out of left field. And I'll say Chang. Because Chang pushes a good chunk of the winger storyline. And also, I remember hearing a lot of interviews with Joel McHale. And he was saying the funniest bit he ever saw was in this episode. And it's when Chang first shows up and he busts the lamp.
With the nunchucks.
That's his favorite bit in the entire show.
Yeah, that's like a spit take moment.
Because it's out of nowhere and it makes no sense. And I think if I was there too, I would probably have been the same thing. Because it's like, why? A, why would you have nunchucks? B, why would you bring them out? C, why would you start swinging them? And D, you broke my lamp. Like, so funny. Just completely out of context.
You answer all of those questions by returning your driver's license.
Exactly. So,
yeah, this is one of the rare episodes where Chang, you almost get like a cute, funny Chang, where you almost like pity him at times before we really get to see other sides of Chang that go much deeper.
So, yeah, and especially when you compare these two episodes to each other, both Valentine's, like, they're wildly different as far as tone goes, as far as Chang is concerned.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The difference between, you know, him dancing on the floor with a bottle of open liquor with
and the
with
LT his Grey,
two dates there, yeah.
The LT Grey
That leather jacket. That jacket is pretty serious, I would
so
say.
So great.
All right, so still talking about the second one, though. What do you think about Annie as an MVP here? She doesn't have enough, certainly I don't think, as much screen time, but throughout the entire episode, she really just is there for Britta. Like, she never gets the clap back. She never gets, like, the winning moment. And there are moments where, like, Britta is berating her and she's just taking it. And there are other moments where she chooses, you know, not to get her revenge or to say, I told you so, but to really high road and, you know, really be there in a way that she didn't have to be.
She does a little bit of the little innocent Annie going, hi. And she gets quite a few of those in this episode.
She's got a few smiles when she's talking to Paige's straight friend, but
yes,
she doesn't lord it over Britta.
And I think that it's a good, Annie's doing a great job of being a fantastic audience surrogate in this, because when you go to it, and this, we'll go slightly off the beaten path, and you can think about how people talk with each other in everyday, just conversational. And Britta is very much, her heart is in the right place, but she's coming from such a gatekeeper's mentality that Annie's like, she's being genuine. Annie's like, wait, it's wrong to ask questions? And Britta's like, I don't know, not a homophobe. And it's like, whoa, okay. So as us as audience members, not Annie the facsimile, but us as audience members are like, okay, like this is leading to something. Like, something's going to happen to Britta because, like, again, heart in the right place, but her execution is wildly all over the place.
Yeah, she's clearly about to step on a giant rake. You could just tell from her tone and her attitude that it's coming in some way, shape, or format.
And it's kind of nice that Annie is there the whole time, just kind of being that audience, being like, no, I'm just genuinely curious and here to support my friend. And then, like, seeing the other foil for her, the other mirror, like, oh, no, I'm not gay. Like, I'm just friends with Paige. And then the fact that Annie knows before Britta does, and she just keeps her mouth shut, and she's like, well, you know, she told me to kind of shut it first, so I'll do what she says, and we'll just see what happens. So as far as that storyline, for sure, yeah, Annie does fantastic work. And then even the little bit of comedic at end where somebody, like, you hear off screen, kiss her! And then she tries to do a lean, and Britta's like, hey, what are you doing?
Is that red hair guy? Or no, you said it was from off camera.
No, it's off camera. Red hair guy, he pops. The instance you may be thinking of is, oh, I don't know who they're looking at. But
all
Jeff
of his
goes,
instances are like that.
Yeah, most of them are. But they're looking at somebody, and Jeff goes, take a picture, it'll last longer. And he goes, thanks. And he takes a photo.
Yeah, so. I think the photos of Slater walking away. Maybe that's in Communication Studies. No, I think it's a different Slater episode.
It might be. But yeah, still funny. But yeah, that's that guy's character, or a random football player. Or he also has one of my favorite lines, which I wish there was a better gif of it out there, where he goes, no one is arguing with you about this. We're all on your side.
No one is on the other side of this issue.
Yeah, like, I love that line so much. Because it's such a great thing you can say to Britta at almost any point in the series.
So, yeah, Britta is one who, these episodes couldn't be more different, I think, for her character. You know, they both start the same way, pretty bad for her, with her way out over her skis. But in Communication Studies, she ends up, like, with a really redeeming storyline. Not just for her, because she kind of gets to have her smile moment where she's like, you know, Jeff, that was the first 20 seconds of a 40-minute voicemail, which he whispers in his ear. Mm-hmm. But she also still genuinely, I think, deserves credit for taking the high road, you know, and ultimately doing what was right for her friend instead of destroying him in the process. I think she kind of gets it both there. But in early 21st romanticism, I don't think it's nearly the redeeming story arc for Britta, unfortunately. Not one of her better episodes, I would say.
I mean, maybe not as much, but I think what you were saying about the first Valentine's episode, they lean on that a little bit more in this one, to where the group's boundaries are a little bit more established, their characters are more established. So that's why you can have the episode start off with such a strong note about that fight about Bare Naked Ladies. Because when Jeff says it clearly, this is a fight, we are fighting. And then I think four sentences later, he's like, even though we're fighting, we still have these plans, I still want to do it. And then he blows them off. And then, so they do a good job of, like, even thinking about these two, comparing them side by side. The first one we talked about, and you were right, that it's a little bit, their characters are still kind of finding themselves. And that's one of the reasons I brought up Jock Troy, because, like, we don't get a lot of Jock Troy. We get, like, maybe 10, 15 episodes before he really turns the corner.
Very season one.
Exactly. And so, but in this one, you get, like, all the other characters have already, they all feel so much more lived in, to where you can have one of them split off, like Jeff does, and he does his own thing. But then at the very end of the episode, he was like, okay, now I understand why I have this comfort in my friends and these people, and I do want to change. I don't want to be Pierce. I want to reach out to them, and I want to let them know I do love them, even if we're arguing, and even if I don't agree about the Bare Naked Ladies.
That's a really good point. They really do find that comfort zone. In fact, they're so comfortable in this point in the show, halfway through season two, how established, how much they've built up these characters, that they're comfortable now introducing some new side characters, chunk at a time, and then also going deeper down the storylines of some B characters who've kind of only ever been there for the one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a lot of sense how it comes together there with their comfort level being and that even, much farther, more advanced than where they were earlier in the show.
Well, and I mean, even as a physical, like, visual cue, when they're reading that text from Jeff, it's literally the five of them snuggling together, not including Jeff and Pierce. Like, they're all on one bench, and they're just kind of having a moment. So, again, that's not entirely realistic, because it's not how people, like, talk or snuggle or view, but for the purposes of the show and what we're trying to say about these episodes, that definitely fits really well.
And like you said, sets up straight into the very beginning of the next episode.
The real kickoff of Pierce's villain arc.
Yeah.
So he goes from drug addict to villain pretty quick in this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that obviously we get a lot of mileage out in the next here run of episodes. And, but yeah, overall, like I said earlier in the show, I would say these are both solidly kind of second tier holiday episodes for me. I do rank them pretty closely. All else being said, I would probably take communication studies, but they're so close. And one thing communication studies can't say is, you know, it cannot compare to the opening of 21st Century for me at all.
I think I'm right here. I can look it up. Which one did I have above the other one? I had it the other way around. I had romanticism above communication studies. I think maybe almost purely on the strength of the Troy and Abed storyline, because it's so cute, and it was one of those things that me and my friends would reference just all the time, especially the yelling of books and then pretending like you're asleep.
Yeah, and just the fact that, you know, it took you looking it back up, I think speaks to the fact that it was, you know, just about as close for you
exactly.
as it was for me. And in ways that a lot of our other comparisons have not been, certainly.
And that does it for this episode of Apartment 303. We will be back on the 1st of March with this year's entry into hashtag 6 seasons and a bracket, which will see all of the songs from our beloved community duke it out bracket style until a winner ultimately emerges. As always, you can find Apartment 303 on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And wherever you do listen, leaving a rating and review is always an effective and cost-free way for you to support our work. For Dan, this is Dave signing off. We will see you in the next episode of Apartment 303.